Hey, everybody, and welcome to the fourth Big Planet Comics podcast. That's four in a row. That's got to be some sort of record for us because
it's a big number. Four.
Yeah, four is a big number. Yeah, yeah. I remember when I turned four the first time.
No, I don't think you remember it at all.
I don't remember it all. I don't remember anything.
I remember it all.
So, by the way, that's Nick talking over there. Say hi to everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, what's going on? It's just me and Nick, and we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. So, I guess one thing that's been going on this week is, well, you tell people, what have we been doing?
We've been watching a lot of 90s superhero cartoons, including Silver Surfer.
The Silver Surfer cartoon. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Silver Surfer cartoon, but it's pretty epic.
It employs a lot of 3D effects.
A lot of really bad 3D effects mixed with crappy 2D animation. It seems to be a staple in 90s cartoons because we were also watching the Iron Man cartoon, which has the most terrible, like...
The transition where he puts on armor.
It turns into 3D. It looks like Reboot or something.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm putting on my armor, and it's like traditional animation. All of a sudden, it, for no reason, it turns into 3D and then fades back into the cartoon. It's really weird.
Yeah, they're like they're putting a bunch of the Marvel cartoons up on Netflix now, and it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, the Silver Surfer cartoon is actually not too bad.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, no, it's pretty bad, but yeah, no, I don't know.
What's good about it?
Definitely not the 3D animation. That's super dated, but the cool thing is that it has a lot of... crazy aliens in it that it looks like they actually spent a lot of work designing aliens.
Yeah, it's got like Kree's and Galactus and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty nerdy stuff, you know. It's definitely worth checking out. All right, so let's get right into this thing. Let's do some news. You ready for this?
That's a flashback.
That's our new sound effect. That means that the news is coming. So, and here's another thing that's coming is Frank Miller's 120-page Holy Terror is coming out on the 14th of September this year.
Finally.
Finally. Do you guys know what that is? It is basically after September 11th, Frank Miller decided that he was going to write a Batman comic that was about Batman beating up terrorists and killing Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, I don't understand why he wouldn't just use like Superman. You know? You think Superman would be better against a terrorist than Batman?
I think because then it would just be like 5 pages long.
True.
Superman would fly around and he would just kill a bunch of terrorists. It would kind of be really messed up.
Yeah, well, yeah. Why would he kill the terrorists?
Well,
just arrest them?
I guess the Superman arrests people. Does he have that power?
Well, he can, you know, fly them to jail.
That's true. He could just fly them to jail. Well, that would be a really boring comic, I think. I think when it's Batman, he can, like, detect things. But it's not Batman anymore. Now it's a new character that he invented called the Fixer, who, from what I can tell, is just going to go around and beat up terrorists.
Yeah.
It's like Frank Miller's way of, I don't know, not being scared anymore after September 11th.
Yeah, I don't know.
It looks pretty rough, though. I mean, his art hasn't been... the greatest since, I don't know, 300 probably.
Yeah, it's been a little iffy lately. He hasn't really done too much though. I mean,
well, he did Batman or The Dark Knight Strikes Again.
True,
and that's you know, it's a bone of contention, but I think it stinks.
I like it a little better than you do probably, but
I think most people like it better than I do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he did some Sin City stuff after that, and now he's working on Xerxes.
Xerxes,
yeah, yeah. I think they changed the title though now to like 302.
302,
yeah, yeah. So, you know, just so people know what it is.
Is it 302 or 302? 302.
I think it's 300 part two.
Okay,
yeah, but it's not three, yeah, anyway.
It's like 302 soldiers this time.
But so this is coming out through Legendary Comics, which is like an arm of Legendary Studios, which makes me think that they're gonna make a movie out of this.
It makes me feel like it's gonna be legendary.
It's definitely going to be completely legendary. So I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be overshadowed by the SEAL Team 6 movie that Disney is making.
What is that?
Well, Disney bought the rights to the name SEAL Team 6, you know, to make a movie about the Navy SEAL team that took out Osama bin Laden.
Is it going to be done entirely with SEALs?
Well, that's what it's a Disney movie. So now I feel like it's going to be like a bunch of SEALs and like Cuba Gooding Jr. is going to be in it. And it's going to be a bunch of SEALs killing terrorists, which to me sounds way more interesting than this. Frank,
yeah, especially
Miller
if there's musical numbers.
I don't even want. I can see it in your eyes that you want to sing a musical number about SEALs killing terrorists, but
I'm writing a musical in my head right now.
Well, maybe it'll be different than that though. Maybe it'll be a tactical team led by Grammy Award winning, I assume, artist SEAL.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, I got a kiss from Rose for you. Bam!
Bam, bam, bam. Oh, see, that's where I should add a sound effect.
Yeah, right.
But that wasn't planned. We didn't know we were gonna be talking about SEAL killing terrorists.
No.
We have to plan this stuff out in advance a little bit.
It's magic.
More, right?
Magic.
Yeah. Yeah. The magic happens here, people. So, I mean, do you think this thing's actually going to be any good?
Maybe.
Yeah. I think I'm with you. I'm like, I'm definitely interested in it. Like, I don't know if it's going to actually be quality, but I'm definitely going to read it.
Yeah. If I go based on Frank Miller's recent work, which I guess is mostly just The Spirit, I would probably assume it's going to be awful.
Oh, I believe you're referring to the film Frank Miller's Will Eisner's The Spirit.
Yes.
Which you love, don't you?
Yeah. Well, no.
You own it.
Yeah, I do own it.
But didn't you like bought it when Hollywood Video went out of business?
Yeah, I bought it for like $2 because I was like, I got to watch this, I guess.
So, yeah, but I mean, you know, a new thing from Frank Miller is always interesting. I mean, even like I didn't like All-Star Batman and Robin, but it was like I always wanted to read it every month. It was always one of the first books I read.
It was so good. So good.
Really? Don't they defeat the Green Lantern with mustard in that book?
No. They it's much better than that. They paint themselves yellow and an entire room yellow. And since Green Lantern can't affect yellow, they just like beat the crap out of him like Robin like beats him. He gets beaten up by Robin.
That sounds better than the Green Lantern movie.
Probably.
And speaking of the Green Lantern movie, that's what I'm talking about. We're turning professional here. So it looks like, according to the Hollywood Reporter, a Green Lantern sequel is already moving forward.
Yeah, all right.
Despite the fact that Green Lantern's only made $118 million, even though the budget was $200 million. We talked about this a little bit. And then the advertising budget was another $125 million. So this is a $325 million movie. But DC's claiming that it was just a little slow out of the gate.
And usually, like, they would say, you know, it's doing well internationally, which a lot of these movies do. Like, Thor did really well internationally, but this is actually doing really bad internationally, like, worse than it's doing here.
Yeah, it definitely is. And also, it fell 66% from week one to week two.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
We got into it a little bit last time about our feelings on the Green Lantern movie, but I feel like, has it been long enough that we can kind of spoil things and talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So if you guys haven't seen the Green Lantern movie, skip ahead like 45 minutes to...
We're just going
to
talk about it for the next hour.
Well, we could. I mean, we have had hour-long conversations about this.
Yeah.
So the Green Lantern movie has a lot of problems with it. The script is really bad. Ryan Reynolds, I think, is going to catch a lot of flack for his performance, but...
He was great, and I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I mean, the real death of that movie was probably Blake Lively.
Maybe. Just, I think the most biggest problem with it was that there was just too much going on, and nothing had enough time to actually develop.
Yeah, so it kept the whole thing kind of boring, even though there was, you know, stuff going on all the time.
Yeah.
But basically, like, it starts out with narration explaining what the Green Lanterns are, but then, you know, 30 minutes later, we get another explanation what the Green Lanterns are.
Yeah.
And then like Hector Hammond comes and he's like, oh, I can read minds. And then like 20 minutes later, they're like, oh, Hector Hammond, you can read minds. And
yeah, there's definitely a lot of over explanation in it.
And then the one of my biggest problems with it, and here's the big spoiler. So definitely plug your ears right now and start singing if you haven't seen the movie yet. Basically, at the end of the movie, Sinestro's like, oh, hey, Hal Jordan, you're a really good replacement for Abin Sur, the former Green Lantern.
And yeah, there's I think high fives all around.
Yeah, high fives, everybody. I think this is going to be really good fun. And then the credits roll, and then, like, they stop halfway through, and Sinestro puts on an evil yellow ring, and he's like, ah, I'm a bad guy now.
Yeah.
Which I guess...
It wasn't built to at all. It was just like, he's like, oh, I'm good, you're good, Hal Jordan, but now I'm just going to put this ring on, because even though I know that people get possessed by it and turn evil.
And I've been thinking, well, you know, they're setting up the sequel, which I assume would never happen, because it costs so much money, and it's not making any money, but... It looks like it is happening.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Well, I'm hoping that the sequel might actually be good. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see it.
Yeah. You need a better script, and it could be awesome.
And they just need to kill Carol Ferris off in like the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, Sinestro Corps War would be awesome. As long as they keep it simple and they don't involve like Superboy Prime and like the Anti-Monitor.
Yeah, I mean, Sinestro Corps War was one of the best Green Lantern comics probably ever. So
yeah, it was great.
And it seems like that's what they're leading up to. But still, I'm a bit skeptical.
Yeah, well, rightfully so.
So that's all we've got for news. It wasn't a big news week this week. And so now it's time to move into viewer mail.
Hey, isn't that for the news?
Wait, I think that's for everything. I only have one sound effect.
Good enough.
Yeah. So our viewer mail this week is from Jessica, who's our biggest fan, it would seem. She's listened to all the podcasts. I have at least like second or third hand knowledge of that.
Yeah, she probably sent us like 30 questions.
She did. She sends us questions every day. She won't leave us alone. She started a Facebook fan page, and she has a Tumblr dedicated to our podcast. It's good stuff. So Jessica says, "Hello, Big Planet Comics Podcast!" Exclamation point. So I should have said that a little more excitedly, but I have a very pressing question that I would like to submit for your consideration. If your general ramblings about Big Planet Comics, if in your general ramblings about Big Planet Comics you happened upon a magic lamp which contained a genie, what three comic related wishes would you make? I must know. Happy Wednesday, Jessica. Well, first we want to say thanks, Jessica, for that question. If anybody has any questions they'd like to send us, you can email those to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com and we will read them on the air. So I definitely intended to think about this question all day and decide what my answers were going to be, but I did a really bad job. So
better just do it on the fly.
Yeah. So let's see. You can go first. We'll go back and forth. We'll each make a wish.
Okay.
Until we get to six total wishes, which will be split between us. That's three apiece.
I think that's right.
If my math is correct.
Math. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe my first wish would be that the DC Comics relaunch is successful and that everybody on Earth starts reading comics. Like, and comics are as successful as movies. That would be awesome, I guess.
I think that's a good wish. Yeah. I mean, that means we'll have jobs.
Yeah.
And we'll want to read more DC comics. We're both kind of Marvel zombies, not by choice. Well, I guess by choice. But
no, yeah, I mean, we both kind of grew up with Marvel comics, but I like DC comics. I have nothing against them. They've just not been too great lately.
And we read other comics too. We don't just read the superhero comics, but I think that's a good one. I didn't know how to approach this question. Like, yours seems pretty good. Mine's like invisibility.
That was kind of my first choice, but I was like, nah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's more like, what superpower would you want? And that's more of like a question for drunk people at a party.
Yeah.
So, crap. Why don't you do your second one? Because I don't have a first one.
My second one? All right. Let's see. If I had another wish, I would wish for every comic ever, maybe. I don't know. That's lame.
Just to own every comic
ever? I would just wish to own every copy of the first appearance of Superman from Action Comics. And so I could burn all but one and then have that one and just let it like go up to like $1 billion and then sell it.
So you've managed with your second wish to turn this into a wish for like $1 million.
Yeah. I wish for 1 million wishes.
I don't, if you can, yeah, I wish for the superpower to have 1 million wishes.
Oh, that's one of your wishes. You just used one up.
Did I? Well, but now I have 1 million more.
It didn't work.
I guess, let's see. So I'm going to go with invisibility as my first wish. I'm going to change that. I'm going to change that to teleportation.
Teleportation, and why?
Because, I don't know, because you could go places really fast. You know, the typical reasons. And then you get, like, the BAMF sound effect.
That would be really cool. You could, like, teleport into vault and steal all their money.
That's good. All your wishes are turning into just ways to get money.
I'm just broke right now. I need money.
That's true. You got money on the mind. I guess as far as like, let's see how this is worded. Just three comic related wishes. So that's pretty broad.
Speaking of pretty broads, I wish that Wonder Woman was my girlfriend. No, that's sad.
Is that really your third wish?
No, that's not my third wish.
Because then you would have three wishes, and I don't even have.
I just wanted to use pretty broad.
All right, I'm gonna go with teleportation. I was gonna wish that more kids read comics, but that was kind of your wish. Well, I'm gonna go with that. I wish more kids would read comics. I feel like comics are skewing older and older now, and you know, when I was a kid, I loved comic books, and I feel like there is stuff out there for kids to read, but there's not a lot of really, really awesome stuff. I mean, but there is good stuff.
There's a lot of awesome stuff. Yeah,
there's Amulet's really good, and the Bone books are still really good. Yeah. And some of the superhero stuff for kids is good, particularly Tiny Titans for little kids. But still, I wish more kids would read comics. So that's two wishes for me.
That's two.
I've got teleportation, more kids would read comics. You're hoping the DC relaunch is good and that you could have $1 million.
Well, mostly the first wish is mostly that I want more people to read comics. Like, I want it to be like a medium, like, you know, like film or like, you know, anything else. Like,
because that'll make us feel more important.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what's your third wish? What do you got?
Oh, God. Third wish. This is a tough one. Third wish. I only have one more wish. You have a third one? I have to think about this.
You better make your... I only have one more wish, too, and the last wish has got to count. Here's my third wish, people. You ready for this?
Nope.
I wish that more people would send in listener mail questions.
That's good. That's a good one.
Is that a good wish?
Yeah. Oh, I got one. I got a good one, actually. I wish that I could get better at writing and drawing comics and actually do it instead of not.
Yeah. Nick is working on a comic called Junktown USA, which is pretty cool. And but he just never works on it.
No, I never work on it. I'm like, Price is Right is on. Well, geez.
I'm going to change my third wish. So that's your third wish. I'm going to change my third wish to I wish Jessica would have a very nice day. And thank you for asking us a viewer mail question. You're pretty awesome.
Yeah, we don't mind your 1 million questions.
Yeah. No, they're great. Yeah, we need more. So remember, send those questions into podcast@BigPlanetComics, and we will read them on the air. All right, should we get to reviews?
Shoot.
Should I use the sound effect again?
Yeah, why not?
All right, here we go. All right, time for reviews. Time to go to the review cave.
Hey, whoop.
All right, so the first thing on our list is All Winners Squad, Band of Heroes. So this is, you want to tell people what this is about? I feel like I'm talking a lot. Here you go.
Well, it's like a World War II comic. It features a lot of World War II heroes that I'm not really familiar with, but
a couple familiar ones too. Captain America.
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah, Captain America, and then you know, like the Human Torch, like the old Human Torch. But it's kind of framed with this old man kind of telling his daughter about the war and how, well, he tells her he was rejected from the war and he couldn't go into it, and then he says, I read all these comics, these old comics, and they're like actual, like timely comics. He's like, here's some timely comics. He's like, read about these. And she's like, oh, these are awful. And he's like, well, you don't understand. You know, they were good at the time, but.
Yeah. And I think it works. It's a good framing device for the comic, and it gives it a little bit of an interesting twist. And like she's an author, and she's always wanted to know about, you know, what he did during the war. And there's a little twist at the end that makes it a pretty cool comic. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, there's a really cool twist. And Paul Jenkins is one of my favorite writers. I loved his Inhumans book. If you've never read that, I definitely.
And that's relevant because he wrote this.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah. So I think All Winner Squad Band of Heroes is the full thing. It's Paul Jenkins. It's an 8-issue miniseries. And
I think it's going to be one of the best. Like, this is a sleeper right here. It's going to be good.
It's a total sleeper. And it's got really good art by, I don't know this person's first name, but it's Dijon Domenico. What a Almost. All these comics people, they have really hard to pronounce names. But
if only you were Italian.
But the art's really good. It's yeah. If only I were Italian, I'd be able to pronounce this. Mamma mia. All right. So I think we're both saying All Winter Squad is a good comic, right?
Awesome.
Really yeah, good. Awesome really stuff. Good. All right. So we're gonna move on to Drums, which I only took sort of a cursory glance at. This is Drums number 2. Usually we're trying to talk about new stuff, but because we weren't around when Drums number 1 came out, we're still in our infancy, you know. It's just our fourth birthday. Yeah. We're celebrating weekly birthdays over here at the podcast.
Yeah.
But Nick read it, and
this cake is delicious. By the way.
Can you give people a breakdown of kind of what Drums is about?
Well, the first issue of Drums started off with follows like a detective, and he comes upon a crime scene where there's I don't know, a few dozen people just dead, and it seems that there was some kind of voodoo ritual taking place.
Santeria, yeah.
Santeria, well, yeah, voodoo.
But all the same thing.
There's actually, this comic is like incredibly researched. Like, there's a lot of things about, you know, these ancient African religions that I knew nothing about. But you learn a lot. But it mostly follows him trying to figure out why these people died. And he's slowly kind of starting to feel like maybe he's getting influenced by all the stuff. And
yeah, he seems to be heavily affected by the rituals and stuff that are going on around him while they're researching this, and he starts that vision seeing dead people and stuff. I mean, it's a pretty creepy comic, but
it's really good. The art is incredible, and it's really well written. It has a good tone of just a good detective kind of mystery.
Yeah, what it does that a lot of comics try to do, and I don't know if they get really that they don't really do it that well, is it's a good mystery.
Yeah.
Like right now, you still don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and there's cool little twists because there's like, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a character in the first issue that they interview that seems completely unimportant, but in this issue, they become a lot more important, which is cool.
Yeah, I think it's well done.
It's awesome.
It's going to keep me coming back. I'm definitely going to read the second issue more thoroughly than I did, and I'll keep reading the third issue. So if you guys like cool mystery stuff and maybe it reminds me a little bit of Spider-Man Torment, you remember that?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't at all.
Because there's drums.
Yeah, no, it's don't listen to what I just said. It's definitely a lot better than Spider-Man Torment.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
We'll see. It doesn't have the lizard in it, so how could it be as good?
Yeah.
All right, so what are we saying? That's That's a read, right?
That's a definite read. That's probably one of the best things I read.
I feel like we need to have like one of those like a ranking system. We're like, it's a read, it's a pass. Oh, burn it.
I give it 3 thumbs up.
3 thumbs up.
Yeah.
That's your mutant power.
Yeah.
It's really useless.
3 thumbs.
All right, yeah, so Drums, it's a good book. I think this week we've got actually a lot of good comics, but so our next book is a graphic novel put out by a couple French creators, brother and sister Galit and Gilad Selektar.
French?
They're French.
Are they French? I thought they were Iranian or something, right?
Sorry, yeah, they are. No, they're Iranian. No, they're from Israel. I'm sorry. It was published in France and it won the Angoulême Award, which is I think the biggest comic convention in the world in France. So, but it's really interesting. It's kind of autobiographical stories about being a kid in rural Israel. It's pretty dark stuff.
It's pretty sad.
It's really sad. I mean, it's, you know, it's about being a kid in war-torn Israel, and then the main character grows up and Noga, she enlists in the army, and so it deals with that a lot. But
it feels like the story could take place anywhere, anytime.
Yeah, that's the one thing about it. It's interesting. I always come into these the more political, say, quote unquote, important comics, and I always think I'm gonna, you know, they're gonna be really didactic and I'm gonna be taught a lesson. But stuff like this, Farm 54, and stuff like Persepolis, a lot of these comics end up being really universal, and it's like, you know, being a kid is being a kid, and a lot of us goes through the same kind of stuff. And the art in this is fantastic, I should say.
It's really good.
It's very spare, but very sort of emotionally rendered at the same time.
And you could tell that they, you know, they it's about the place they grew up, so they know a lot of details of it. So, like, you know, you'll see a lot of little details in the background where you know, most people will just draw like a house and a shed, but they like know the area so well that it's all really well rendered.
Yeah, it's really well researched, really well written, and really emotionally resonant. I mean, it's a good comic.
Yeah,
it's definitely worth checking out. So that's Farm 54. Definitely take a look at it. All right, so we're going through a bunch of stuff we like here. This is good. All right, so then we're going to move on to Fear Itself, Black Widow, which I liked, but I was just asking you about it. You said, we'll talk about it. So you sounded like you had a few things to say. What did you think of this book?
I thought it was pretty good. I think the main problem I've had with it is it just doesn't seem to have any purpose, really. It's just kind of like it's just Black Widow's like, oh, Steve Rogers sent me on this mission to distract me from the stuff that's going on in Fear Itself.
I think that's fair. I mean, it takes place in Paris where, what is it, the Iron Man 2.0 story is taking place right now? Oh, no, sorry, the Invincible Iron Man story.
Yeah.
Basically, you guys probably all know what Fear Itself is, but basically fear is sweeping the world and these hammers fall from the sky and people are turning into bad guys and stuff. But in this comic, in France, basically, the Grey Gargoyle showed up and turned everybody into statues. And this Black Widow comic is about Black Widow taking down a group of people that are taking advantage of this situation. And
my main question about it is, who is Peregrine? He's like the hero that shows up in it that flies around. And
I think he existed before this, right?
French superhero, I guess. I don't know.
How many French superheroes can you think of? There's Peregrine from this. Is Bat-Rock the Leaper French?
Yeah, but he's not a superhero. Well, yeah.
He's got superpowers. I guess he's got superpowers. Is he a bad guy?
Yeah, he's definitely a bad guy.
I don't know anything. But no, I thought this was like a, you know, I mean, I guess, yeah. What's the point? But what's the point of anything?
Yeah, true.
Oh, jeez.
We're getting really deep.
We're getting really depressed now. But no, I thought it was like a kind of fun standalone story. I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, but for you, it's just kind of like a little bit of a throwaway.
Yeah, I'm just kind of like, okay.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it's enjoyable, but it's certainly not a must-have comic.
It's not like well-written enough for me to be like, this is awesome. It's just kind of like, it's good.
It's a one-shot, so it's not really going anywhere. It just kind of wraps up and everything is the same.
Yeah.
So Fear Itself, Black Widow. If you like Black Widow, I mean, it's actually a decent Black Widow story, but there's just there's not a lot going on. Now, speaking of, well, not speaking of anything, but
Black Widows.
Yeah, speaking of, no, that doesn't fit into this at all. But if you like Black Widow, maybe you hate sparkly vampires for some reason.
Oh, yes.
That's no transition, but I'll tell you who hates sparkly vampires. The Goon.
The Goon.
Yeah.
I mean, it says so on the cover.
It does.
He says, are you bleeping me?
Yeah, that's a lot of bleeps.
Maybe one less bleep than that.
I could have done that in post.
But he's pretty angry about the Sparkly vampires.
He is angry about sparkly vampires. So the goon's been kind of off the radar for a while. It's been, I think, more than a year since an issue's come out.
Yeah, Eric Powell's been busy. He's working on the goon script for the movie, which should be pretty sweet.
Yeah, which David Fincher's producing. That should be pretty interesting. Yeah. So can you give people a quick rundown of what the goon is? Not this issue, but just basically what the goon comic is about.
The goon is about a goon. He's an enforcer for the mob, and he's kind of... Nobody really knows it, but he supposedly is working for this mob, but he's just kind of it's working on his own. And him and his partner Frankie, who's a little mobster guy, or just fight monsters. That's about it.
Yeah, basically, is a kind of if Hellboy liked to punch people a lot more. You know, they take on Cthulhu-esque things and vampires and zombies and things like that. But the good thing about the goon is it's always got a sort of sense of humor about it more than most things like that. And yeah, goon's always awesome, and Eric Powell's art is always good. But in this issue, the goon takes on a gang of
sparkly vampires.
Right. And they're all dressed up in baseball gear. It's like they tear apart Twilight. They're getting glitter poured all over them and stuff. It's kind of just the first few pages of the story, and then the big, you know, the guts of the story is kind of a demonic possession thing.
It's the best though, because it's got the little kids that are they're basically little rascals. Cypher. Little rascals, but they're drink and they fight and they curse and stuff.
Yeah, the whole story is a lot of fun, but I think the big thing that's going to pull people into this issue is the fact that he's basically beating up Edward and all the stupid vampires from Twilight.
Yeah, yeah, and in one page kills him.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. So I think it's definitely worth checking out. It's good stuff. And if you haven't read The Goon before and you like that kind of Hellboy stuff, but you like humor comics and stuff too, it's definitely worth checking out the old trades.
Every once in a while it's really deep and emotional, which is somewhat jarring sometimes, but it's really good.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. So on from Goon. Oh, I skipped a bunch of stuff. That's okay though. So let's go to
skip the best stuff.
I did skip the best stuff. I feel like we might get in trouble for talking about the Flashpoint books this week, but let's talk about these Flashpoint books. So let's start with Flashpoint the Canterbury Cricket.
Chirp, 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 chirp.
Yeah, basically.
This is where we need sound effects, cricket sound effects.
We do need cricket sound effects. This book was, it was terrible.
It was pretty bad. Also completely pointless. This is way more pointless than the Black Widow one tie-in.
Yeah, it's basically, the cricket seems to be part of this. Flashpoint is a, I don't even know where to start with
yeah,
this.
Yeah,
yeah. We've talked about Flashpoint a few times, yeah. But basically... there's this war going on between Aquaman and Wonder Woman.
Atlanteans and Amazonians.
And Lois Lane is the leader of Damn this sense. Resistant movement. And Canterbury Cricket is part of that. And this is basically just his origin story.
Yeah, but he's like a new character and his origin doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, his origin does it like a church collapses on him and he becomes a superhero.
Yeah, a church collapses on him and the cricket is there and he's like... praise to God or something, and then God turns him into a cricket. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, no idea. Definitely of all the Flashpoint books, unfortunately, this has probably been the worst.
Yeah.
Although there's a good teaser at the end. It's to find out who the leader of the Resistance is.
Oh, yeah. Read Lois Lane and the Resistance.
Oh, spoiler. Yeah, so Canterbury Cricket was not the best of the Flashpoint books. And speaking of that, the Green Arrow, by the way, this was a one shot. Most of these Flashpoint books are three part miniseries, but Canterbury Cricket was just a one shot. So I guess that's something to be thankful for.
Yeah, but it's in the other comic, though.
And then there was another book called Flashpoint Green Arrow Industries. Better than Canterbury Cricket, I would say.
Yeah, definitely better.
Yeah. It was kind of a weird story, though. I don't really know where it fits in. Green Arrow is basically the head of this corporation, and he...
he's not really Green Arrow though. He's just like Ollie Queen.
Yeah, it's strange. I don't know. I feel like it was written by a really right wing person because he keeps talking about how everybody says corporations are bad and like why do people hate corporations?
Yeah, they spend whole lot of time trying to justify the existence of corporations.
But basically, it's to me it was a really strange book because the protagonist of the book is sort of portrayed as a hero in a way, but then he does a lot of really terrible things. I don't want to give it away. I think it's almost worth reading just because it's so strange.
It's really weird. Yeah.
Yeah. But, there are four Flashpoint books this week. So we're going to move on from that one.
Next,
Flashpoint Hal Jordan.
Yeah. Hal Jordan. He's in that new movie, right?
He is in that new movie.
Thor.
Yeah, I think it's called Thor. So Flashpoint Hal Jordan was actually okay, but it's kind of just a retelling of the Green Lantern.
Yeah, it's
origin story.
This is also completely pointless. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one problem I feel like we're going to come across with a lot of these Flashpoint books, is that with the DC Universe relaunching in September, which I hate to keep talking about. I mean, we keep going on and on about it, but it's a big thing for comics that's happening. But I feel like because of that, all these Flashpoint books just feel kind of throwaway stories, just like filler while we're waiting for the relaunch.
Yeah. It's like they just got a bunch of writers and they're like, here, write this stuff while we work on the stuff that's going to come out later.
So this is basically like the basic Green Lantern origin story of Hal Jordan's father dies when he's a little kid, and then he becomes a test pilot, except nothing. Basically, everything happens.
Like, if
exactly
you read
the same.
Like the first part of Jeff Johns' like secret origin storyline, it's almost exactly the same.
And the secret origin storyline is great, and it's definitely worth reading. So
yeah, but it's almost exactly the same. And then I don't know.
I mean, I'm still curious to see where this goes. Yeah. I mean, it's got two issues left. I mean, it's just mostly set up in this issue. So I mean, it might go somewhere.
Probably not.
But yeah, probably not. And that moves us on to what I think was the best Flashpoint book of the week, Project Superman.
It definitely was the best of all these.
Project Superman was written by Scott Snyder, and he's been doing awesome stuff recently.
Co-written by Scott Snyder.
Oh, is it just co-written by Scott
Snyder?
Yeah,
it's him and somebody.
Lowell Francis.
Yeah.
I don't know Lowell Francis, but Scott Snyder's been writing Detective Comics. He's been writing American Vampire. He's a good writer.
Yeah. Gates of Gotham, that's also good.
And I think he does. Yeah, and Gates of Gotham, which is a really good series. I think he does a good job with this. It's just...
It's not clear what, like, I don't know who the main character is. Like, I'm not sure. I don't know. It ends in a really weird way. I don't want to, like, say too much about it.
Yeah, basically the big thing that happens in this book is something that if you're going to read the book, you don't want to hear us talk about, because it's kind of a big thing. I feel like the biggest fault with this book is Gene Ha's art, Gene Ha drew Top 10 and then the beautiful Top 10, The 49ers, which is one of the most well-drawn graphic novels, at least in the superhero genre, that I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it just seems like you phoned it in a little bit on this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were just like right before, like maybe a month before it came out, they're like, hey, Gene Ha, you want to draw something? He's like, oh, sure. Like, oh, you have like 3 days. He's like, all right.
Yeah, so it seems a little rushed. The inking's like very, like, it's like too thick or something. And there are basically no backgrounds.
Yeah, there are no backgrounds.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm going to keep reading it. I'm kind of hooked into this Flashpoint stuff at this point. I definitely want to read all the books, and I think we'll continue to talk about every Flashpoint book that comes out every week. God. So it is interesting. It's just like some of the books are hitting and some of them are missing a little bit. I think this book was a good first issue, but we don't really know where it's going at this point.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. So
be continued.
So from there, we're going to move to a book that I think both of us liked a lot this week, which is Iron Age number one.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, so this is called Iron Age number one. It's basically the second issue of Iron Age. There was a book called Iron Age Alpha. They really screwed up on the numbering on this. It should have just been a 4-issue miniseries instead of a number zero. And
or 5-issue, because there's like an Iron Age Omega or something like that.
There you go. So that it's just confusing to people. But so basically we set up an Iron Age Alpha. And yeah, tell people what the setup for this is.
Well, in Iron Age Alpha, Iron Man, somebody he doesn't really remember, but somebody whose life he affected, decides he wants to destroy Iron Man. And so he brings back the Dark Phoenix, and the Dark Phoenix destroys the world. But right before that happens, Iron Man, uses the time machine to go back in time. And
where he ends up is hilarious. Basically, Iron Man goes back to the time period when he was drunk, like the Demon in the Bottle storyline, probably the most famous Iron Man storyline. And
his interactions with drunk.
Yeah, his interactions with himself drunk are hilarious. And he's trying to tell people he's from the future. Nobody believes him because they just think he's a drunk.
Yeah. He's like, hey guys, I need your help. I'm from the future. I'm Tony Stark from the future, and I need you guys to help me save the future. And they're like, oh, you're just drunk.
Yeah, you're just totally drunk. And it's fun because it's almost written in a style that's reminiscent of that time period, like an 80s kind of comic. But because of that, it just ends up being a really fun...
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's really good. And it seems like he's going to be jumping through different time periods, which should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, because the second half of this is him jumping to a to a different time period with like Captain Britain and stuff.
Right. And that part of the story is pretty interesting too. Yeah. So, I'd say Iron Age is definitely worth checking out, especially if you're a fan of like Marvel comics from the 80s. It's good stuff.
Yeah. If you just want like good superhero stuff, it's awesome. And it's Iron Man's really well written. He's like, it sounds like Iron Man. It sounds like Tony Stark.
So next up we've got Lucille, which is a huge graphic novel that was put out by Top Shelf this week.
It's really heavy.
Yeah, it's really heavy. Nick can't even lift it.
It's double meaning though. It's heavy in multiple ways.
It is heavy in multiple ways. This is a pretty dark graphic novel. It's written by, I'm going to get this wrong too, Ludovic de Boerm.
Can't pronounce any names.
I know. But I don't know where to find these names online. I need a pronunciation thing that's going to help me out.
Ludovic de Boerm?
That sounds good. That sounds a lot better than what I said. But yeah, so Nick, tell people a little bit about this thing.
Well, it's a coming of age story. It's about a girl who's anorexic and a guy who's kind of a weird kind of punk guy who's into satanic stuff, sort of. He's just kind of playing around with people, and his dad's an alcoholic, and they kind of meet and start having a romance, but there's a lot of complications, and it gets pretty messed up pretty fast.
Yeah, it seems like the sort of problems that their parents have seem to sort of haunt them throughout the whole book, and it gets into some pretty dark stuff, some really... It's really depressing.
But, it's a very depressing comic.
But there's some dream sequences, and I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. It's another one of these books where you just have to look at it. The art's really spare, but it's really well done. All the page layouts are fantastic. It's got really good lettering. I mean, I know that's a weird thing to mention, but I mean, it's weird
because at first I started reading it and I was like, oh, I don't really like this art. Like it's really simple and kind of. There's not much going on, but then as you get into it, it's got a really good flow to it, and like there's so much in like a little picture. It's like, you know, character dies at some point, and then, you know, you see them reacting to it, but it's like just a series of pictures of their faces, and it's simple, but it's really well done. Yeah,
I was reading a quote from Chris Staros, the publisher at Top Shelf, who put out this book, and he was basically saying, you know, that this is a book on par with something like Blankets or Essex County, which, I mean, just from its size, it's got that going. But I think as far as quality, I think he's dead on. I mean, this is, and I hate to say, an important graphic novel, but this seems like, you know, one of those ones that people are going to be reading for a long time.
I hope so. It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So Lucille's definitely one worth checking out. Moving on to much more serious comic, The Marvel Universe versus Wolverine number one. So we differ a little bit on this one. Why don't you go first?
Oh yeah. This is kind of a sequel of sorts to the Marvel Universe versus the Punisher comic, which came out a year ago or so.
I think that's about right.
Yeah, and it's the Punisher versus Marvel Universe one was like it's almost like a Marvel Zombies type thing, but it's more kind of grounded and really serious. And this one is about Wolverine kind of going through the same thing, like Spider-Man eats the Rhino on camera at like a hockey game, and then one of the X-Men gets killed and eaten, and Wolverine is basically trying to find out who killed him and what's happening.
And I think that was kind of my problem with it. It's like, you know, the Marvel Universe versus Punisher was already a little bit of a retread of Marvel Zombies. It was covering kind of the same territory. And then, to me, Marvel Universe versus Wolverine is then recovering the same territory that Marvel Universe versus Punisher had already recovered.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. Like, I felt like it was like, oh, zombies again. But I don't know. I felt like it was really well written, and Wolverine's voice is pretty strong in this. And it's a good, like, it's a little more of a mystery in this. Like, you kind of know, like, you know, there's zombies or whatever, but you don't know, like, who is a zombie? But they're not really zombies. They're something kind of different. But
yeah, I think that's fair. It's not like the kind of thing where I was reading it and I was like, oh, this is no good. It was just like afterwards, I was like, this is kind of just the same thing I've read two times already.
Yeah, but it was really well written. I felt like it whenever Wolverine had to like it wasn't like Marvel Zombies where like a hero would turn into zombies, somebody would kill them, and they'd be like, you know, move on to the next one. Like this felt like whenever Wolverine had to kill somebody, it was like, it really affected him, and he was. It's just really well written.
And this is the same writer as Marvel Universe.
Yeah, and Punisher. Same artist,
Jonathan Mayberry, and the same artist, Lawrence Campbell. And the art, and the art and writing are good. And I mean, I guess basically that covers it. If the art and the writing are good, I guess it's a good comic.
Yeah,
right?
It's understandable though to feel like it definitely feels, because I mean it takes place I think before the Marvel Universe vs. Punisher comic, so it's kind of like I kind of know what happens to some of these characters, but it's kind of like Wolverine's own journey in that, which is good enough.
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth checking out. It was just, you know, I had problems with it, but I think they were small problems. So moving on to a book, basically, you know, we do our planet pick every week, and this one was right on the cuff. I mean, this book could have easily been our pick of the week, but Scalp number 50.
Yes.
Do you have just like a list of all of the creators that are in this book? It's ridiculous the amount of people that worked on this book, and just amazing, amazing people. Go for it.
Well, you got like, I mean, the first part of the story, which takes place in the past, is it's all written by Jason Aaron, but the first part is drawn by the regular artist, who's Guerra, and he's awesome. And the rest of it is like a list of like probably like some of the best artists ever. It's includes, let's see, what do we got? We got Dean Haspiel.
Dean Haspiel, who drew The Alcoholic, and if you guys have ever seen the show Bored to Death on HBO, basically the Zach Galifianakis character in that show is based on Dean Haspiel, and all the art in that show is by Dean Haspiel. Yeah, he's like a comic superstar.
Yeah, it's got Tim Truman, who's been working on Conan stuff for a while, and then Jill Thompson, who's awesome.
Yeah, she worked on, well, of course, Scary Godmother and Beast of Burden, which I think we've talked about
both are awesome.
Yeah, they're both fantastic.
Jordi Brené, who's been drawing Jonah Hex for a while.
Yeah, and he did like the sort of Clara comics, and Jordi Brené, he did Torpedo. He's a French artist who's just amazing.
Yeah, and Dennis Cohen does one of these. And Brendan McCarthy, who usually draws really crazy spacey stuff, actually draws a crazy spacey thing in this.
I am nutso for Brendan McCarthy. He's one of my favorite creators. He was part of the solo series that DC Comics did, which I wish they would collect. There were so many amazing stories in those solo comics. But also Brendan McCarthy, he was the cover artist for Shade the Changing Man, which to me is one of the most underrated comics of all time. He did the Spider-Man Fever miniseries that came out last year, which is like a bat crap insane, yeah, Spider-Man comic crazy with Doctor Strange. Brendan McCarthy's art just has to be seen to believe. It's like colorful, trippy. It's amazing.
Yeah, and the last person is Steve Dillon, who's worked with Jason Aaron a few times before on Punisher.
Yeah, on the awesome Kingpin story that was in Punisher Max.
He's been working on it still since then.
Yeah. But the Kingpin story was the most awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And they're actually, almost all of these artists do like a pinup. Like the first part of the story is takes place in the past, and it's kind of like it teaches you about like how to scalp people.
Yeah, yeah. This is the first issue of Scalp that has scalping in it.
I think it might be. There might have been another one, but this is the one that focuses on scalping.
This is very scalping heavy.
Yeah, yeah. There's about like two different people teach you how to scalp, but also it's kind of after the main part, it switches to a little later on, and it's kind of the founding or beginning of the Prairie Rose Foundation or Reservation Foundation. But that part's drawn by Igor Cordy, who's actually really good.
Yeah, Igor Cordy, whose art is actually pretty solid. He got kind of a bad rap because he would be, you know, Frank Quitely would do an issue of New X-Men with Grant Morrison, and then Igor Cordy had the sort of unfortunate position of following him up, which...
And he had to rush through it. And
he definitely did.
Didn't look as good as normal stuff, but his normal art is great. Like, the art in this is excellent.
I guess for anybody who doesn't read Scalped, it's definitely one of the best comics coming out right now, and probably Nick's favorite comic.
It is my favorite comic.
Yeah, can you just give people a little breakdown of what Scalped is about in general?
Well, if you've never read Scalped, first of all, you suck. But second of all, Scalped is about a...
You guys don't suck. We love you guys.
Yeah, don't stop listening. No, but it's about Dashiell Badhorse, who's an FBI agent who grew up on the Prairie Rose Foundation. He's been sent by the FBI.
That's Reservation, not Foundation.
I said Foundation again? God. I don't know why I keep saying it. Probably because I read Future Foundation this week, which is good, but whatever. Anyway, so yeah, it's about him, and he's going undercover on this reservation to kind of take down the chief, who's also kind of sort of a mob boss. And it's kind of like The Sopranos. Like, you kind of start sympathizing with even like the bad guys, like the criminals, and it's the best.
Yeah, that's the easiest breakdown of Scalped. It's like it's The Sopranos on a Native American reservation, and yeah, it's fantastic.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and Scalped 50 is probably one of the best issues of the whole series. So yeah, definitely good stuff. If you haven't read it, you might not want to jump in on 50. It kind of is in the middle of a few storylines, but definitely read Scalped. It's good stuff. Moving on to a completely, like, the complete opposite of Scalped, but a book that I loved and for me was right on the border of being one of my favorite books this week too, which is Super Dinosaur number 3.
Yeah.
Super Dinosaur is a book by Robert Kirkman, who writes Invincible and Walking Dead, and it's basically his it's like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's almost like every single issue they do something where I'm like, oh, that'd be a cool action figure.
Yeah,
like,
definitely. Super Dinosaur is the character of Super Dinosaur is basically a sidekick to this kid, and he gets to wear crazy outfits. You know, he like goes in the snow and he wears this crazy snow outfit. It's
skis. Dinosaurs on skis are amazing.
And he's got a jetpack. I mean, a T-Rex with a jetpack.
Yeah, this issue is like, he's like, oh, we need to fight a flying villain. He's like, here's a jetpack.
But I'd say the feel of it is very similar to something like Ben 10 or Generator Rex. You know, like it's like a really good Cartoon Network series.
And it's awesome. And they're kind of building like long term kind of plot lines. And it's not as simple as something like Sonic the Hedgehog or something.
Yeah, it's definitely still a Robert Kirkman comic. It's like his comics always on the surface seem simple, but he does so much good stuff with character that they really shine. It's like Invincible seems like a simple superhero comic, but then once you get to the core of what it's about, I mean, it's so much more than that. And it's like Walking Dead is almost the last thing Walking Dead is a zombie comic. It's so much just about the people. Yeah. And I feel like Super Dinosaur is doing the same thing.
And it doesn't hurt that Jason Howard's art is incredible.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think Jason Howard, who drew Astonishing Wolfman. Astounding Wolfman. I think his art in this is leaps and bounds beyond what he did in that book.
Oh, his art in that was awesome.
It was good, but this is much better.
He seems to be having more fun with this. This is like, I get to draw crazy things every panel.
And the cool thing about Super Dinosaur, I mean, kids can read it, which is always a good thing. But then it's not dumb either.
One of your wishes is coming true.
One of my wishes is definitely coming true.
This is selling pretty well, actually. The third issue sold better than the second issue, which is a good sign.
Is that nationally or is that just for us?
No, it's everywhere.
Oh, well, that is
good. It's in the back of the book.
That is a good sign. Yeah. Well, they did a free Comic Book Day issue, which always tends to help.
Yeah, there's actually an amazing thing in the back of this where you see Robert Kirkman and Jason Howard going around to a bunch of comic book stores during Free Comic Book Day, and there's a giant costume of a Super Dinosaur, but it's made by the guys who work on Walking Dead, so it's awesome.
I didn't see that. We should stop this podcast right now so that I can look
at it. Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, and we're back. our Big Planet pick of the week is Witch Doctor number 1.
Yes. Witch Doctor was awesome.
Witch Doctor was definitely the best book that, well, I can't say definitely. There were a lot of really good books this week, but Witch Doctor was fantastic. I think we came up with a pretty good summation of what it is. What was that?
It's like House meets The Exorcist, I guess.
I've never seen House, so.
Well, House is, you know, I mean, House is the guy they go to where they're like, I can't figure out why my son is dying. He's got some unknown illness. Can you help us? And this is the same thing, except the unknown illness usually is something crazy supernatural.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He takes on the exorcisms that other exorcists can't handle.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of Blackjack, which is a Osamu Tezuka comic. Yeah. Basically about, it sounds like it's basically what House is based on. Yeah. It's like a rogue doctor who can do operations that nobody else can do. And
well, this guy's a lot more fun than House. House is pretty mean and serious. This guy's more like lighthearted and kind of goofy. Like he's the best part in this entire issue where he asks his assistant, he's like, hand me my scalpel, and he gives him like a sword.
Well, you need swords if you're gonna defeat like fear demons that are trapped in little kids and stuff.
But it's got great ideas. There's cool like medical stuff that kind of blended with the supernatural stuff, and he uses machines that kind of use magic symbol. It's awesome. It's really good.
And this is written by Brandon Seifert, who I don't really know him. No. And Lucas Kettner. I mean, they may have been around for a while, but these are new creators to me, and they do an amazing job. The art is very cool. It reminds me a little bit of this book that came out a couple years ago called Mysterious the Unfathomable.
That was also good. And this is on Robert Kirkman's Skybound imprint, so I think this is kind of like somebody, I guess, that he found somehow, and then he's like, I'll put your comic out under my imprint. And if you read even Super Dinosaur and Scalped, he's like trying to promote it in every comic that he does, but it's worth it. It's really good.
Yeah, deservedly. I mean, it's a very good comic. And I think it'll appeal to fans of things like Hellboy, BPRD, and the aforementioned television show House.
Yeah.
featuring either Jeeves or Wooster. I can't remember which one he is, but yeah, so that's pretty much it for this week's podcast.
Is that it? Really?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. There's a little bit of unfortunate news at the end here. Gene Colan, who was one of the greatest artists in the history of comics.
For sure, yeah.
He passed away on June 23rd at the age of 84. He's probably most well known for his run on Tomb of Dracula. I mean, he had like a 70-issue run on that in the 70s, which is, I mean, it's just something to behold. Nobody does that anymore. He had such a loose, great style, and his anatomy, just everything he did was fantastic. He did Batman in the 80s.
I loved his Daredevil stuff.
Yeah, his Daredevil stuff is great. And yeah, that's a little bit of sad news there at the end.
He was old. He lived a long life.
He did. 84 is a good age.
He's got a lot to leave behind that's going to be with people forever. So
he's definitely leaving a legacy. So we're going to dedicate this podcast to the memory of Gene Colan. And we'll see you guys next week.
All right. Later, guys.
See ya.